Theme parks are bizarre places to begin with. Add a controlled substance and a visit can be truly mind-blowing. John Jeremiah Sullivan wrote an essay for the New York Times Magazine recently about an unusual family trip to Disney World. Sullivan, his wife MJ, and their 4-year-old daughter Mimi went to the Magic Kingdom with some friends, Trevor and Shell, their 5-year-old daughter Flora, and their younger son who goes by the name of Lil Dog.
When the children were huddled lumps in various spots on the sofa bed, Trevor and I stood on the balcony. He talked about how challenging it would be the next day and during the next days and nights in the park, not being able to smoke. That wasn't high on my list of concerns. In fact, I was foolish enough to think that the fact of Disney, that we would be spending our time in the heavily surveilled park, might banish the very notion of smoking weed, easing Trevor's many withdrawals, and making my life easier too, in that I wouldn't spend too much time stoned, only a few puffs at night like this. It would be a non-issue in terms of domestic harmony. Trevor wasn't trying to hear that at all. He was definitely stressed. "I'm gonna lose my mind in there," he said. "Have you ever been in there?" I had once when I was 11. I didn't remember much. It bounced off. "Well, we go every year," Trevor said, "and every year I feel like my skull's about to split open." "I always figured you were doing brownies," I said. "I do brownies," he said. "I have brownies, but you know." I did. Edibles are good, and wise heads move toward them over time to save their lungs, but there's something about the combination of oxygen deprivation and intense THC flush that comes with smoking, and in particular from smoking joints. There's no real substitute for the abuser. A brownie can alter your mood over hours, but a joint swings a psychic broom around you. It clears an instant space. "I actually saw this thing on the internet," Trevor said, "where people were talking about getting high in the park." "At Disney World?" I said, as if I hadn't been listening. He led me back inside and quietly cracked open his laptop on the kitchen counter. "Check this out," he whispered. Only the two of us were awake. I dropped into one of the swivel stools in front of the bright screen. I was reading before I knew what I was reading, but it was like a chat room, or a forum. Forum is the better term. A motif of cannabis leaves and naked women holding glittery buds ran down the left margin, a pothead forum. Trevor scrolled it down to a posting, the subject of which read, "Hello from Disney World." An anonymous person, evidently the veteran of a staggering number of weed-smoking experiences in the park, had done a solid for the community and laid out his or her knowledge in a systematic way. It was nothing less than a fiend's guide to Disney World. It pinpointed the safest places for burning the proverbial rope, telling what in particular to watch for at each spot. Isolated footpaths that didn't see much traffic. Conventional smoking areas with good hedge cover. Places where you could hide under a bridge by a little artificial river. Those were its points of interest. The number of views suggested that the list had helped a lot of desperate people. The main point was clear and consistent. Be ready to book it. No sooner had we pressed our fingers onto the biometric scan pads, because if you can't trust Disney with your biological data, then old Trevor began to show signs. He hadn't been able to smoke that morning, quarters too cramped. He was craving. Not that he acted jumpy or cranky. I could just tell from the body language and sentence length that it was on his mind. Nothing like an enclosed space. And Disney World, for all its gigantism, manages never to let you forget for a second that you're in a very tightly enclosed space to make a head start scanning for exits. Lil Dog and the ladies were sailing by up above on the Dumbo ride in 3 successive elephants. Mimi had a tentatively happy face. It said, "I'm ready to think of this as fun, as long as it doesn't go any faster or higher." Trevor and I leaned on the railing like bettors at a track, smiling and waving every time they went past as if we were dolls with arms hooked to wires. Trevor had his phone out with the internet dialed up to the guide. He consulted it when they were on the dark side of their orbit. Checking it against a map of the park, we determined that one of the spots mentioned wasn't too far away. A little used maintenance pathway with trees alongside it and some dumpsters. Given a properly positioned lookout, you could have a puff in relative calm. We slipped away. Now we were truly at Disney World. A person didn't come here every day. What is the scene here? Hello, primary colors. Hello, quickly fading microdramas of passing human faces, incessantly deciding whether to make eye contact. Hello, repeating stalls and gift shops. We were walking on the balls of our feet. The surface of things had become porous and permitted of the potential for enjoyment. Where were our womenfolk and little dog? Let's find them. Let's be good fathers. Tomorrow was Father's Day. Oh my God, I didn't even remember that. We don't need to remember that, Trevor said. We are that. We are Father's Day. Next memory, riding on the mechanical boat through the It's a Small World attraction, continually spraying Mimi, who looked as if she had been boiled in a tank. Her cheeks were so red and her little forehead was glowing. The whole time I was spraying, she was waving at the dolls, acknowledging every single doll's wave with her own, showing an OCD-like desire not to miss anyone. It seemed that she misunderstood the nature of the dynamic, believed we ourselves were part of some parade being observed by the dolls. A more natural idea, I suppose. Why would you go floating by in a boat to look at children standing along the banks of a river? They would be looking at you, because you are a princess. Flora was angry because Lil Dog hogged their family sprayer and was just sitting there spray-fanning himself right in the face. And by the end of the ride, he had squirted all the water away. Son, Trevor said. No sooner did we enter Epcot than Trevor started checking his phone, and while I won't bore you with more detail about that business, there being no tediousness quite like dope or tediousness, suffice it to say that the rest of the day was spent on pendulum bouts of ecstatic, hyper-attentive parenting, followed by separation from family to indulge addiction and vice. There is deep yearning at Disney. What you feel when you're in the state we were in and all of your emotional pores are wide open is yearning. There is something at stake here for the families, in terms of that knife edge between joy and disappointment. So when you see people whose kids are definitely not having fun, but are standing in place and screaming, having to be dragged along by their leash harnesses, there's a throb of empathetic sadness. They are not having a good Disney. I looked at Mimi. Was she having fun? I thought so. She was smiling. But I knew there were times in my own childhood when I must have seemed to my parents like I was having a blast, while being inwardly tormented by some irrational worry. Ah, youth. How many of my genes had she inherited, and could I teach her how to play them better? You want joy for your children, but you yourself have brought them into this world of suffering. The strangest thing that happened was the very last thing that happened. As we were leaving the park on the evening of the last day, it began to rain a monsoon-like rain. You'll have to believe me when I say it was exceptionally violent. The next morning, I said to one of the bellboys at the hotel, "You guys probably get weather like that a lot, huh?" He said, "No, we don't." It was as if a black spaceship had swooped down and blocked out the sun. Sheets of wind were tearing through. Lightning continually exploded just above our heads. The tram caravan kept having to stop, which made it only scarier, as if they had driven us out into the open in some sacrificial way, as target practice for an offended storm god. Also, it was disturbing to see the clockwork perfection of the Disney machine threatened that way. It hinted at a larger underlying weakening of something. The tram we were riding in was open on the sides and covered above only by a plastic canopy. We were exposed and getting blasted. But we had the Disney ponchos. Shell had made us all buy them. At a gas station, so possibly they were knockoffs. But they worked. And by sitting close together with all of them spread, we could make a tent. It must have looked very weird. On the other hand, I'm positive that every other person on the tram wished they were under it with us, and I'm pretty sure at one point we did have some other people's kids. Underneath, in the dark, the children were loving it. Mimi and Flora screamed in terror every time the thunder boomed, but their terror was full of joy, and afterward there was laughter. and it was wonderful to be able to cover them. We had the solution for this, barring a direct strike. Later, when asked, Lil Dog said that this had been his favorite ride.
That's John Jeremiah Sullivan reading an abridged version of his New York Times Magazine essay, You Blow My Mind, Hey Mickey! Sullivan's a contributing writer for the New York Times Magazine and the Southern editor of the Paris Review. He's also the author of a collection of essays called Pulphead.